So picture this. You wake up, grab your coffee, and open your phone to just, catch up on your industry.
Yeah, the morning routine.
Right. But waiting for you, right there in your feeds, are 488 brand new pieces of content.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, articles, research papers, hot takes, sprawling threads, 488 of them every single day.
That's overwhelming.
Exactly. And you desperately try to read maybe 15 of them, but because you're just drowning in noise, you end up missing three crucial stories you actually needed to see.
Right.
And worse, you waste your precious time on 10 that absolutely do not matter. It's
Yes.
just, it's the sheer mind-numbing exhaustion of trying to stay informed.
It really is. I mean, it's decision fatigue before you've even finished your first cup of coffee. We're all basically living in that state of constant, relentless information overload.
Which is why today's
Yeah.
they built a machine instead.
Right. Today, we're looking at how one developer built a system that literally digitizes their own personal taste, essentially firing the Billboard top 40 of the internet and putting an AI deputy editor in charge of their reading list.
And I want to say right up front to you listening, whether you are tracking, artificial intelligence research, volatile financial markets, or really just the daily news in your specific niche, this deep dive is going to fundamentally change how you think about capturing your own judgment.
It's a total paradigm shift.
It is. We aren't just talking about filtering news. We are talking about taking this ephemeral concept of human taste and turning it into a concrete executable file.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the first question I had when I saw that 488 story problem was, well, pretty basic.
Sure.
Why not just subscribe to a solid newsletter or, set up a news aggregator? Going through the trouble of building a custom software architecture seems like total overkill when there are like a dozen apps that claim to do this for you. Well, it comes down to a fundamental flaw in how those commercial aggregators actually work. The author's core thesis here is that aggregators are inherently just popularity filters.
Right. They just show you what everyone else is clicking on.
Exactly. They do not actually surface the best news. They aggregate mainstream taste. Like if you open a standard tech hot list today, what are you actually going to see?
Probably OpenAI shipping a new consumer feature, or some trendy startup closing a massive funding round.
Right, or a CEO's one-liner that went viral on social media.
It's like tuning into a radio station hoping to discover obscure, brilliant indie B-sides. But the station is entirely programmed by Billboard Top 40 request lines.
That's a perfect analogy.
Popularity weighting just absolutely kills the niche. It buries the deep cuts.
It really does. And the developer behind IxRadar, they didn't care about the mainstream hype. They explicitly wanted those deep cuts.
So what kind of stuff were they actually looking for?
Nuanced details, things like model internals, inference optimization, or agent product design. The signals they actually needed were small, overlooked research papers that reframe a complex idea.
The stuff that gets zero engagement on regular social media.
Exactly. Or, a random late-night post that leaks a clever internal coding practice. Those hyper-specific signals simply do not rank on general trending lists.
Because trending lists run on traffic,
Yeah.
and traffic requires broad appeal.
Right. I mean, aggregators solve the mathematical problem of deduplicating links and ranking them by engagement. But true filtering, the kind that actually moves the needle for a professional, requires explicit editorial judgment.
You can't outsource that.
No, you cannot outsource your own professional judgment to a crowd's popularity contest. The crowd's taste is generic. The author wanted a system that aggressively catered to their highly specific, highly technical taste.
So if you can't rely on the crowd, you have to build your own filter.
Right.
Which brings us to the actual machinery of AxRadar. How do we physically process a daily fire hose of 488 stories without going completely broke on cloud computing costs?
That's the real challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, because throwing every single article into an AI seems like it would just drain your bank account by Tuesday.
Well, the system architecture here is remarkably elegant. The author designed a four-stage pipeline, and each stage runs completely independently, just passing data forward.
Okay, break that down for me. What's stage one?
Stage one is the fetcher. It pulls from about 50 different sources. We are talking standard RSS feeds, the native RSIV API for research papers, the X API for social signals, and incredibly, WeChat accounts.
Wait, I want to pause on that. WeChat.
Yeah.
WeChat is famously a walled garden. It is almost impossible to get data out of it systematically.
It's notoriously closed off, but
Yeah.
a massive amount of cutting-edge AI research and discussion actually happens within Chinese developer circles on WeChat.
Oh, interesting. So how do they get it out?
by using a tool called RSS Hub. It acts as this open source bridge to translate those closed ecosystem posts into standard web feeds. So the fetcher can just yank that raw HTML out of the walled garden and throw it right into the pipeline alongside, say, a standard TechCrunch article.
That is a massive advantage. You're grabbing global signals, not just Western ones.
Exactly. So then we move to stage two, which is a normalizer. And what's cool here is this step is completely devoid of AI. It is pure traditional code.
Just cleaning things up.
Yep. It cleans up the messy HTML, extracts the author's name, standardizes the timestamps, and crucial to the whole operation, it strips out all the tracking parameters from the URLs.
Oh, to find the canonical link.
Right.
Let me guess why that matters. If a link has tracking tags from Twitter, and the exact same link has different tracking tags from a newsletter, an AI might look at them and think they're two completely different stories, right?
You nailed it. If you don't normalize the data first, you end up paying the AI to read the exact same article multiple times just because the URLs look slightly different.
Which wastes money.
Exactly. So once the normalizer finishes, you have this pristine, deduplicated list of items.
Okay, that brings us to stage three. This must be where the heavy lifting happens.
It is. Stage three is the enricher. This is the first time AI actually enters the chat.
Okay.
The system runs parallel calls to Azure OpenAI's GPT 5.4 model. It reads the clean text and generates both Chinese and English summaries. It tags the item across three specific axes: capability, entity, and topic. And finally, it creates a 3072-dimensional embedding.
Okay, we need to translate 3072-dimensional embedding for a second.
Yeah, that's a bit technical.
For anyone not building AI models on the weekend, an embedding is essentially a mathematical map, right?
Exactly.
Like, imagine a massive multi-dimensional library. Instead of sorting books alphabetically by author, you sort them purely by underlying concept.
I like that.
So a paper on neural networks goes on the exact same shelf as a paper on deep learning, even if they don't share any of the exact same vocabulary words. Right. The 3072 dimensions are just 3,000 different ways the AI measures which shelf that article belongs on.
That is a brilliant visualization. By mapping the article mathematically like that, the system deeply understands the meaning of the text rather than just matching simple keywords.
Got it. So what happens after it maps it?
Well, once the enricher finishes mapping and summarizing, it hands everything over to stage four, the scorer. This is a second, completely separate AI pass. It looks at the enriched item and scores it from 0 to 100.
And sorts it.
Yeah, sorts it into buckets like featured or top priority P1, a general all reading list, or simply excluded.
But doing two separate AI passes for 500 stories a day,
yeah,
that still sounds expensive for a solo operator.
What's fascinating here is the economics of that hard boundary between the enricher and the scorer. Think about how tastes evolve.
Okay.
You might decide tomorrow that you want to rank robotics articles higher. Because the stages are separated, you don't have to re-summarize and re-embed all your historical data.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you only rerun the score. The heavy, expensive lifting of the enricher only happens once per article.
So you decouple the understanding of the article from the judgment of the article.
Exactly. That separation is what makes this viable for a single person. Over a 30-day period, the author ran about 68,000 AI calls.
And the cost?
The total cost was in the low three figures in U.S. dollars.
It's incredibly cheap.
It is. And those mathematical embeddings you described earlier. The author noted the text embedding three large model costs are practically a rounding error. Creating the map is two orders of magnitude cheaper than generating the text summaries.
Wow. Okay, so we have a highly efficient pipeline. Fetch, normalize, enrich, score.
Right.
Everything we just discussed is impressive, but it's a fairly standard, well-engineered automation workflow. Mm-hmm. Here's where it gets really interesting. The actual rule book the AI uses to score these articles is not a prompt.
Yes. This is the architectural choice that elevates the entire project.
Because usually it's just a prompt, right?
Right. When most developers build an AI filter, they just shove all their preferences into a giant, messy prompt for the scorer model. Like, you are a helpful assistant. Find me good news about tech. Ignore the boring stuff.
Which never works well.
No, the author recognized that approach is a massive trap.
I can see a few reasons why, but break down the trap for me. Why do prompts fail for long-term systems?
Three major reasons. First, prompts are essentially black boxes. You tweak one adjective in your prompt, and suddenly the AI starts ignoring everything from a certain publisher, and you can't strictly define why.
It's unpredictable.
Exactly. Second, prompts are not easily diffable. You can't put version 1 and version 2 side by side and clearly see the line-by-line logical changes.
And the third reason.
They are deeply brittle. If you change the underlying AI model 6 months from now, all that nuanced prompt tuning you spent weeks perfecting just evaporates.
It sounds like the difference between having a temperamental chef who refuses to write down their secret sauce and having a perfectly documented recipe card that literally any sous chef in the world can replicate, regardless of what kitchen they're working in.
Yes. Instead of relying on a temperamental prompt, this system uses a 600-line markdown file named editorial.skill.md.
A plain text file.
A plain text, highly structured, version-controlled file. It intentionally splits the editorial judgment, which is the human work of defining what matters, from the scoring execution, which is the machine's work of reading the text.
So what actually lives inside those 600 lines? Like, if I open that file, what am I reading?
You are reading incredibly specific, borderline ruthless editorial constraints.
For example?
It explicitly tells the AI, quote, "Your reader is an industry-literate professional. Do not explain that ChatGPT is an AI tool by OpenAI."
That saves so much time.
Right. It also sets hard exclusions. It tells the AI to block any technical articles that just throw jargon without providing an on-ramp to understand the mechanism. Block pure cloud vendor promotional material. Block opinion pieces that have zero data sourcing.
So it's identifying the fluff and just killing it at the root.
Exactly.
Does it have instructions for what to elevate?
Yes, it grants positive signal bumps of 3 to 5 points for things the author explicitly values.
Like what?
If an article contains a substantive architecture update from a major lab, add 5 points. A research paper that actually includes a reproducible, practical claim rather than just theory, bump it up.
Okay, so we have the recipe card. The rules are fully documented. But how does the AI actually grade the ingredients? Assigning a number from 0 to 100 seems highly subjective.
It can be, yeah.
How do we prevent the AI from just making a vague guess based on those rules?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of how humans evaluate information, the author realized early on that importance is a terrible, useless metric.
Because it's subjective.
Right. Important to whom? Important in what context?
Yeah.
So to solve this, they ported over a framework called HKR.
HKR.
Yeah, it was originally designed for scoring essays, but it adapts beautifully to news. It stands for hook, knowledge, and resonance.
Hook, knowledge, resonance. Okay, walk me through how the AI applies that to a story in the pipeline.
Sure, let's use a hypothetical piece of news. Say a major tech company announces a brand new AI chip.
Okay.
The first axis is the hook. The AI asks, does the headline or the angle create legitimate suspense? Is there a twist? The markdown file explicitly instructs the AI that corporate marketing speak does not count as a hook.
Ah, so a headline saying revolutionary synergy in cloud compute gets a zero for hook.
Absolute zero. Second is knowledge. The AI reads the body of the article and asks, does the reader walk away with a new number, a new mechanism, or a new claim that is actually worth testing?
So it looks for substance.
Exactly. Does the article explain how the new chip reduces heat generation, or does it just say it's, quote, better? If it explains the actual thermal mechanism, it gets a check for knowledge.
And the final axis, resonance.
Resonance evaluates the emotional or professional impact. Does this hit an identity nerve for a developer? Is the finding so surprising or fundamentally useful that the reader would immediately copy the link and forward it to a peer on Slack?
I see. Instead of asking the AI a vague question like, oh, is this a good article? The system forces the AI to defend its logic.
Yes.
Does it have a hook? Does it provide concrete knowledge? Does it resonate?
And that structure completely cures the black box problem. The judgment path becomes 100% explainable. When the author logs into their dashboard, there are literal check marks next to the stories.
Really? Just right there on the screen?
Yeah. A featured top-tier story must hit at least 2 out of the 3 axes. A priority 1 story hits all 3 and achieves a score of 85 or higher.
I absolutely love the transparency there. If you open a story and see hook is checked, knowledge is checked, but resonance gets a red X, you instantly know the AI's logic.
Exactly.
You can say, ah, this is a solid, interesting piece of research, but it lacks that viral sharing factor.
And it works defensively, too. My absolute favorite mechanism in this entire system is how it handles partial matches to protect the reader's time.
How so?
If a story contains knowledge but lacks a hook, it doesn't get deleted. It just sinks into the secondary reading list for later. But, and this is the best part, if a story has a hook and absolutely zero knowledge.
The clickbait scenario.
Exactly. The system terminates it instantly.
Because a compelling hook without any underlying knowledge is the literal definition of clickbait.
Yes.
That is incredibly satisfying, just mathematically annihilating clickbait before you ever even have to see it.
It's ruthless and totally efficient.
Okay, let me bring us back to reality for a second. The tech industry, and really any fast-paced industry, evolves constantly. Our personal tastes change.
Of course.
The topics we obsess over in January might feel completely irrelevant by June.
Yeah.
So how does a static 600-line plain text file keep up with a dynamic world? Doesn't the rulebook get stale?
That is where the system introduces an ingenious feedback loop. They call it policy iteration.
How does that work?
As the author reads their curated 15 stories a day, they leave micro-reactions in the dashboard. A thumbs up here, a thumbs down there, maybe a star, or a quick one-line note on why an article was helpful.
Just casual browsing feedback.
Right. But they do not act on these immediately. They batch them up. Over the course of a week, they might accumulate about 50 of these subtle feedback signals.
Are they sitting down on Sunday morning and manually rewriting 600 lines of markdown to reflect those 50 thumbs up and thumbs down?
No, not at all. They hit a button labeled Generate Draft.
Okay.
This action wakes up a specialized Claude agent. The agent is provided with three specific inputs: the current 600-line markdown policy, the batch of 50 recent feedback reactions, and strict instructions to write a newly updated draft of the policy file.
Hold on. I have to push back here.
Go for it.
Up until this very moment, we have been praising this architecture because it puts the human firmly in control of the rules. If we suddenly let an autonomous AI rewrite the core editorial guidelines, aren't we surrendering that exact control?
That's a fair concern.
I mean, isn't the machine basically taking over the steering wheel of our taste?
This raises a critical question about human-in-the-loop design, but the author was incredibly careful to avoid that trap.
Ow.
The Claude agent is not the editor-in-chief. It functions purely as a deputy editor. It operates under severe constraints.
What kind of constraints?
The system prompt forces the agent to propose only minimal, necessary changes. More importantly, the agent must explicitly output a list detailing what it changed and, crucially, what it did not change and why.
Ah.
Yeah.
It's like a junior lawyer drafting a revision to a complex contract.
Yes.
The junior lawyer does the tedious work of finding the clauses that need updating based on new case law, but they have to hand the draft to the senior partner. The junior lawyer can't just sign the contract themselves.
That is the perfect analogy. The agent generates a code diff showing the proposed additions in green and the proposed deletions in red.
And the human reviews it.
Right. The human senior partner has to read the diff and manually click apply. Final approval always stays with the human.
That makes total sense.
The author explicitly notes that if you let an AI directly modify a production-facing policy without a human review, your debugging costs will inevitably explode. The AI will overreact to one weird article you liked and ruin the whole rulebook.
So drafting the update is automated, signing off is manual.
Exactly. And as someone who appreciates good data architecture, my absolute favorite detail is that these policy files are stored in a SQL database using parent-child relationships.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning version 7 descends from version 6. It operates exactly like a Git commit tree for code, but it is tracking the evolution of human taste.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If the new rules start letting in a flood of garbage articles, you can trace exactly which update introduced the bad logic. Rolling it back to a pristine state is just one simple database command.
You literally have version control for your own brain. Like, I preferred my reading habits from 3 weeks ago. Let's roll back to version 4.
Exactly.
That is mind-bending. But to keep us grounded, no custom software project is a magic wand. There are always roadblocks.
Very true.
What is broken or missing in AX Radar?
The author was very transparent about three specific hurdles they are actively wrestling with. The first is the challenge of detecting low follower virality.
What does that mean?
Well, the most valuable early warning signals in an industry often come from practitioners. Some random engineer with 3,000 followers discovers a new optimization technique long before an influencer with 300,000 followers talks about it.
The people actually doing the work, not just talking about the work.
Exactly. But finding that specific combination A low follower count paired with the sudden spike in high engagement is technically difficult.
Why?
Because querying the X API for that kind of granular data quickly burns through heavy API quota limits. They are experimenting with scraping fallbacks for platforms like Zihu and Chahomshu to bypass the APIs, but reliably capturing that pure grassroots signal remains a huge bottleneck.
That makes sense. The walled gardens fight back. What is the second hurdle?
Cross-source clustering. The back end of the system is actually incredibly smart about this. It uses something called cosine distance math.
Okay, let me see if I can translate that.
Go for it.
If every article is mapped into that 3,000-dimensional library we talked about earlier, cosine distance is basically measuring the angle between two different books on the shelf.
Right.
So if the angle between an article from TechCrunch and an article from The Verge is essentially zero, they're writing about the exact same event.
Yeah, that's spot on. The math allows the back end to realize that five different links are all covering the same corporate announcement, and it merges them into a single data point.
So what's the problem?
The problem is that the front-end user interface isn't fully wired up yet to display that cluster data cleanly. So as a user reading your morning feed, you still might see a few redundant headlines.
That sounds slightly annoying, but honestly, purely a UI problem waiting for a weekend coding session.
Pretty much.
What is the third roadblock?
Score calibration drift. This is the massive hidden challenge that anyone building an AI evaluation system will eventually face.
Drift. How so?
During development, the author swapped their primary scoring model. They moved from Claude Haiku to GPT 5.4.
Okay.
They used the exact same 600-line markdown policy, and they ran it against the exact same batch of test stories.
Let me guess. The numbers didn't match.
The mean score instantly shifted by a full 5 points.
Wait, just because it is a different AI model reading the same rules?
Yep.
Why would the scores jump if the rules are identical?
Because different AI models have different underlying alignments and personalities baked into them during training.
Oh, I see.
One model might act like a lenient professor who grades on a curve, while another acts like a strictly literal, harsh grader. They interpret the nuances of the HKR rubric slightly differently.
So you can't just swap models freely?
No. If you swap your underlying model, you have to completely recalibrate all your score thresholds. A story that scores an 85 on Claude might require a 90 to pass the filter on GPT.
Got it. Okay, so we have an automated, highly efficient pipeline that fetches, normalizes, and enriches 500 stories for pennies a day.
Right.
We have a human-readable 600-line markdown file that defines taste using the objective hook, knowledge, and resonance framework.
Yes.
And we have an AI deputy editor that suggests minimal updates based on weekly feedback, all tracked in a version-controlled history.
It's an incredible system.
So what does this all mean? When we zoom out from the APIs and the code, what is the grand takeaway here?
I think the ultimate lesson is a radical reframing of how we view our own expertise. We tend to think of human taste and judgment as this ineffable magic.
Something you just feel.
Exactly. Whether you're a product manager deciding which feature to prioritize, a designer instinctively knowing what layout feels right, or an analyst filtering global news that gut feel you rely on is real. But right now, it is currently just an undiffable, unshareable internal policy.
It exists, but it's locked in your head.
Right. By forcing yourself to crystallize your intuition into a plain text file, your judgment ceases to be a mystery. It becomes readable. It becomes editable.
And rollbackable.
Exactly. You stop arguing with your peers in meetings using vague subjective examples. Instead, you can simply send them a commit diff of your evolving logic. You are digitizing the very mechanics of your expertise.
That is such a powerful shift in perspective. I really want you, listening to this right now, to look at your own daily workflows. What professional gut feelings do you rely on every single morning that could actually be written down as a hard, unbreakable set of rules?
It's a great question.
What would your personal 600-line markdown file look like if you had to write it today?
And I will leave you with one final thought to mull over along those lines.
You hear it?
If our deepest professional judgment and our personal tastes can truly be crystallized into a single versionable file, what happens when we start trading them?
Trading taste.
Yeah. Imagine logging onto a marketplace tomorrow and simply downloading the exact taste file of your favorite thinker, an industry idol, or a legendary investor.
Wow.
You plug their file into your pipeline, and instantly you see the entire internet through their highly specific, perfectly calibrated lens.
That is wild.
Right. Would an ecosystem of downloadable taste democratize genius, or would it just create the most inescapable, highly efficient echo chambers in human history?
Downloading someone else's brain file to read your morning news. What a concept to end on. On that note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us to unpack AX Radar, and as always, keep digging deeper. We'll catch you next time.